Support for this podcast comes from the Nelson Atkins Museum of Art, presenting A Frame of Mind, a new podcast taking a look at race in America through the lens of the museum's past, present, and future. Available now wherever you listen to podcasts. Learn more at nelson-atkins.org.
And welcome back. This is Up to Date on KCUR 89.3. Well, how much screen time is too much? When should your child get his or her own phone? And when it comes to social media, how do you prepare them for that? Today's parents are the first generation of folks to wrestle with those difficult questions. And there are so many of them, especially given the fact that popularity is what matters most to so many kids these days, and the path to popularity often runs through interaction with screens. Now, help is on the way in the form of a three-session in-person and online forum titled The Screen Sanity Summit. The first session is January 19th at the Church of the Resurrection out in Leawood. Joining us now is Tracy Foster. She's the co-founder and director at START, which stands for Stand Together and Rethink Technology. That's a nonprofit that aims to help families raise happy kids in our digital world. Tracy, it's nice to have you. Welcome.
Steve, thank you so much.
You know, these are such tough decisions that families have to make. You know, it's so difficult, Tracy, when it comes to screen time and how much cell phone time kids can have after dinner every night. You know, these conversations may start off peacefully, but then they oftentimes go off the rails in about 3 seconds. But your point is families do have to approach these issues at some point, right?
Absolutely. I mean, you nailed it, Steve. When we look at national surveys, screen time is the number one battle inside of homes. And it unfortunately oftentimes turns into a battle. And because of that, parents don't necessarily know how to engage, actually partially because, like you said, we're the first generation. And so how do we step in? How do we help keep our kids healthy and happy while also understanding that life does look different for this generation? And we think that what's happening a lot is that parents, because they feel this pressure of, oh, well, my kid says everyone else has this, everyone else does this, all of those things, they're oftentimes not feeling the confidence or the competence to step in and really press in for something that they know would be healthy and good for their kiddos.
You know, it seems to me that, you know, so many parents, you know, we didn't grow up with this technology. It came along after we became adults, and that makes it a little more difficult to navigate as well, too, doesn't it?
It makes it so much harder. We talk a lot about how we're in a new territory and there's no roadmap. In most parenting situations, there are a few different places you go. You read the book, right? Like what to expect when you're expecting. And there is no what to expect when you're tech-specting, even though that's become the biggest, the biggest part of parenting in many ways these days. You go to your elders who helped raise you, and they can give us encouragement, but they've never lived this. And then the really interesting thing that caused us to start our organization a few years ago is we went to those friends just a little bit ahead of us who typically have no shortage of advice, Steve. You probably live this, you know, pick the topic, sleep, sports, anything. And you actually just get so many really strong opinions.
Yeah.
And when we went to families here in Kansas City just ahead of us and said, hey, what should we do about these things? What was amazing is the amount of deer in the headlights looks that we got, hushed tones that said, hey, I don't know what to do, but do something different.
Wow.
And they would share these stories of accidents that happened in their home that they never intended. We're the first, you know, we're just learning. Like Maya Angelou says, you know better, you do better. But the most startling thing to us was how many of them shared, and I've never told anyone that this happened. And so what's happening is I think because we as the adults, either the parents or the grandparents, are usually the ones who introduce these devices, who purchase them, there can be so much shame around what has accidentally happened. And that can stand in our way of pressing through, sharing, and trying to find new cultural norms about how we can use these incredible devices. We don't think they should all be thrown into the lake. These incredible devices for good, while minimizing some of those side effects.
You talk about these accidents. What are you referring to here, Tracy?
Yeah, well, unfortunately, kids on average, ages 9 to 10 are when kids get their first smartphone, if you look at national data. And when they do that, they have the whole world at their fingertips and the weight of the world on their shoulders in some ways. So there is some really devastating data in terms of loneliness that I can share about, anxiety, depression, ties to things that are leading kids to have suicidal ideation and even acting out on that, body image issues, cyberbullying. It's just like a tsunami of different side effects that come from having so many things happening on the digital world. And also having so much happen in the digital world where kiddos are not getting mentorship. In almost all areas of their life, we try to mentor them and guide them. But this topic has been a little bit of a divide because parents feel like, well, I'm not a digital expert, but they're still the life expert. Huh. And so we hear from a survey by DoSomething.org last year shared that only 14% of youth feel like they have ever had a helpful conversation with any trusted adult about their digital world. So, and when we hear these outcomes, they need some guidance.
So you're suggesting that some maybe sizable portion of this mental health crisis this society is going through right now might be tied back to cell phones and screen time.
Absolutely. We work closely with the Johnson County Mental Health Center, and it is so aligned with what they're seeing in their client population, as well as what we hear from school counselors, police officers, and others. I mean, I think that there are a variety of aspects to it. One is that kids and probably, frankly, all of us can be so inclined to judge our relationships by the number of friends or followers that we have.
Right.
But there's not the same level of depth or support. And when you post something that's not so good, we have heard from Steve a gut-wrenching number of local school counselors who have shared stories that fifth grade girls who are cutting themselves because they posted something on Instagram and they didn't get enough likes and they're horrified by it. Mm. So there are so many different elements, or even the loneliness. We hear people say, you know, we hear youth say that they know exactly what emoji to put on someone's post. Let's say someone's grandmother passed away. They know exactly what emoji to put on that post, but they have no idea how to actually go over to that friend's house and sit with them and say, hey, man, I'm sorry. How are you doing? And so there's a lot of emotional processing that is critical to who we are as humans. And just from a brain and emotion standpoint, that allows us to process our emotions and build resilience. That's another thing too. Technology allows us so much opportunity to just ghost.
Yeah.
Rather than to press in and have some hard conversations.
I'm visiting with Tracy Foster, co-founder and director of a group called START, about technology and how to help our kids navigate it. You say, Tracy, that awareness of a problem is the first step to addressing it. I don't want to minimize that, because I'm thinking that there are some parents out there who are not aware of what a problem this technology can pose, or they're in denial about it.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I know we've already mentioned some of the mental health things. Another thing that I will say, if someone's really looking for a heavy thing, Steve, and you can tell me if this is too heavy for someone listening on the radio, kiddos, you may want to turn this down if there is a kiddo in your car right now. But one other aspect that comes is we tell parents sometimes, you know, we often get asked, what's the right age to give a kid a phone?
Right.
And we don't think there's an exact age. We can talk about that. But one of the things that we'll say is, well, whenever you do that, if you're not going to put a lot of protections and intentionality around it, it's whenever you feel comfortable with your child falling into violent pornography.
Hmm.
And so we actually work with Heidi Olson over at Children's Mercy, who is studying the devastating effect that the exposure to this pornography, which is not what any of us grew up with, it is really violent. It is really hardcore. And the way that it is distributed to kids, it just pulls them further and further in. But what we know is that what kids see, they act out. And so there's just gut-wrenching data from Children's Mercy Hospital showing the increase in sexual assault that is occurring acted out by 11 to 15-year-olds.
Huh.
And so what it is the kids in the past, if you had someone in that age range who was sexually assaulting another child, it was an absolute, like, I shouldn't misquote this, but in the 90% of that kid had been abused, because it's not innate.
Right.
And now what they're finding is it's kids who have never been abused, but they're accessing this pornography.
Wow.
And then they act it out on the kids in their home or their cousins. And just, so there are a lot of side effects. And I could go into many of them, but it is something worth addressing.
Well, given that, what you just said about this threat that's out there, what do you say to parents when they come to you and say, Tracy, how old should my kid be before they get a phone?
Yeah. So in our program, in our Screen Sanity program, we go through five different foundations for what we call digital health. So we can try to answer that question, but it does vary on a lot of different things.
Sure.
And we try to think holistically about, just like we think about our physical health or our mental health? How do we think about our digital health? What are some of those healthy habits? One part is certainly when to think about giving your kiddo a phone. And what we talk about there is using a driver's ed approach. So this is one of our five principles of digital health. We call it ride, practice, drive. But basically, with almost anything else that our kids do, we give them incremental responsibility as they demonstrate competence. So like with driving, I doubt that when you turn 16, your parental figure said to you, Steve, happy birthday, sweetheart. We're so happy you're 16. Here are keys to a car.
Right.
I know you've never driven it really before, but go out, have fun, be safe. No, because even though a car can help us to accomplish dreams that we never would have otherwise been able to reach, it comes with dangers. And we know that. And we would say the same is true with phones. And so just like with a car, you know, I remember my kids starting in the back seat and asking how many speeds I have on my windshield wipers when it's raining. Or the more convicting one is when my kids learned how to read and they understood relative values of numbers. And they said, Mom, something must be wrong with our car because the speed limit sign says 35, but our car says 42, you know, and you start to explain some of those values. Or then they get to the stage of learning to drive. And I remember I learned to drive in the Shawnee Mission Northwest High School school parking lot. And day one, I drove like 100 yards straight and I was done because it was like a lot to take on. Uh-huh. But what's happening right now is kids so early are getting a full smartphone. And so we encourage parents, there are products available now so that if your use case is that you want to call your kid to make sure that, you know, soccer practice is still on, you can get some introductory devices. So we encourage delaying giving that smartphone until you've gone through some other things. Maybe start at however young you feel like you need to get a hold of them with a walkie-talkie. Then graduate to a smartwatch at the right time. Then consider what we love to call dumb phones. There are some amazing, cool looking, not just flip phone, they're cool phones that are great for middle schoolers or other ages. And then think about a smartphone, but do it in a stripped down way.
Some of these products you're describing, Tracy, these are fairly new. I don't recall these being around when I was a parent a few years ago.
No, they are constantly evolving. And I feel like we're at the first point of saying, we have a path. These are things that even for us, we started our organization 4 years ago and we dreamed of and worked with and had so many conversations with people in various fields saying we need this. And they are here and they are good and they are worth celebrating. And that's one of our biggest goals is how can we help spread the knowledge about that? And how can we start to make it the cultural norm? So when we do our Screen Sanity program, our core tenet is about bringing people together because it's great to have one person read a book and try to live this. But the more that we can provide resources to be catalysts to change the norm so that when you go into a school grade, a bunch of them are having these phones, it helps make it easier for every parent if their child isn't the only one.
I should mention that the three-part Screen Sanity Summit that Tracy is mentioning here, it will take place January 19th, the 26th, and February 2nd at 6:30 in the evening at the Church of the Resurrection out in Leawood. It's both online and in person. You can register or get more information at westartnow.org. Again, www.westartnow.org. I'll put that website out again in just a little bit. So how do you recommend to parents, Tracy, how to start conversations on this topic, how to start monitoring how your kid uses a smartphone once they get fuller access? Because you can't be next to your kid all the time. How do you recommend the path forward here?
Yeah, great question. I'll maybe take that in two pieces. In terms of starting the conversation, one of the things we really recommend is leading with empathy and vulnerability. And so oftentimes we suggest two conversations, having one conversation that's just really fun around a fire pit or, you know, your favorite family meal that just says, hey, what does our family stand for? What does it mean to be a Kraske or a Foster or whatever your family name is? Because our biggest premise is that we want to use technology to support us living out our values. It can do that in amazing ways, but it's also many times accidentally getting in the way of that. So if you start with just this fun conversation, and if you have little kids, it might be like, our family loves pizza. Okay, great. Put everything on the list and celebrate if you love adventure or hospitality or kindness or whatever it is. And just like put those on the fridge. It doesn't need to be Pinterest or Etsy level, but just start to pay attention to those and have conversations like, hey, you did a great job showing that family value. And then a couple of weeks later, we recommend, or whatever the time is right for your family, to again, convene around what we love. We love device-free meals. We love meal times. So probably a meal, but to say, hey, I noticed, leading with yourself. Hey, I just want to tell you guys, I noticed that there were times that my phone got in the way of me doing this. And I want to apologize. And I want to have you guys help me to come up with, I want you to hold me accountable and build me up. And what can we be doing? Are you guys noticing that too? And the more that we as parents can share that we are assessing our own digital health and we're starting with ourselves, I think it really helps others in the family to feel comfortable to say, hey, I have noticed that you did that, Mom. And I noticed that I'm doing it too. So that's an easy way to start the conversation to say, hey, I want to make sure that our phones aren't standing in the way of these values. In terms of monitoring, there are a couple things that come to my mind. Well, a few. One is I do recommend, just like we put on a seatbelt in the car, I do recommend to parents that every device has some type of a filter on it. It's not a sign of lack of trust of your kids. It's a sign of just like, it's the same as a seatbelt. It's, hey, there are a lot of things out there and we're going to try to help keep you safe. I'm not necessarily going to monitor everything you do, but this is going to help you.
But it always seems like, Tracy, you hear about those filters and then you hear right away kids snickering in the background saying there's 18 different ways to get around those filters.
That's right. They are not perfect, but they are better than nothing. It's almost like, I don't know, it's almost like if you want to keep your kids safe and you put up a fence, but the fence isn't bulletproof, you know? So kids do know how to get around it, but it can lead to some good conversations and it really does still help in a lot of cases. I mean, I share a lot. My kids love sports and we live close to town center. We buy most of our sporting goods at Dick's Sporting Goods.
Sure.
And so a lot of it happens accidentally before a kid is even starting to go for some of those types of things. But the other thing I would say is just as important, maybe even more important than the technical, the app. I mean, I wish that there was an easy button and it was just install this one up and it's fine. But going along with that is explaining why you're putting this on there. And also just making it clear to your kids that you are safe harbor to let them know, hey, some of these things we're not saying you're a bad kid. If we find out that you've gotten enmeshed in some of these things that we don't think are good, we're here. We're listening. We're going to be responsible. One of the most important things is to have that, we call it our I'm not shocked face when our kids come and talk to us. Because if we absolutely naturally overreact and grab the phone and are like, you're never seeing this again, then our kids won't talk to us. Because taking away their phone is one of the most life-altering things that we could possibly do.
Because the phones are so important to their daily lives, their social standing, everything else that's wrapped up into that.
They're so important.
Yeah.
Steve, I would love to say one other thing is there are a variety of things that we talk about more broadly about digital health, but in terms of helping to keep our kids safe, if you're looking for one place to start, I would recommend taking phones out of bedrooms overnight. Because two reasons. Number one, sleep is the most critical factor for mental health. And there is absolutely an epidemic of mental health issues happening among our youth. So even if our kids are up like learning Mandarin in the middle of the night, it's not helpful. And there's surveys that show that 80%+ of kids are using their phone when they're supposed to be sleeping, oftentimes waking for every notification. So we need to get our kids to sleep. But secondly, our impulse control is lower at night in the dark by ourselves. So most of the regrettable things that happen do happen at night. So if you can set up a thing that, you know, phones charge in your room or charge in your kitchen, like we say, just like our devices need to charge, so do we. And so let's pull them away. We recommend this for adults too. Get it off of your bedside table. But I think that can go a really long way in helping. And again, the more that it becomes common, the less weird it is to just say, hey, we can buy you an alarm clock. We can get you a speaker to listen to music.
You know, the power of these things just amazes me. You told our producer, Reggie David, that 86% of kids these days want to be social media influencers when they grow up. I mean, social influencers being people with large numbers of social media followers who can persuade people to buy certain products. I mean, 86%. I mean, kids in my generation wanted to be an NFL quarterback or an astronaut.
Yes.
And that's flipped on its side. What's that about?
Yes. And actually, when you look at the younger kids, 8 to 12, YouTuber is the most common career aspiration. And it is 3 times as popular as astronaut. Like you mentioned, I'm like, come on, bring back the astronauts. I think it's a sign of the huge cultural shift. And what is most powerful to me about that is I think we have a resource called My Social Media Playbook. It's available for free download on our website, or you can grab one on Amazon. But it's a tool to talk with your kids about their social media intentions. Because I think what's most interesting is how much we can get caught up in the sway, even as adults. But then when you think about kids whose brains aren't as fully developed, and there's just so much focus on identity and self-esteem. But what's so unbelievable about this is you could say, oh, are we just old bogeys being like, oh, why would kids do this? This is a new thing. I don't know. But the thing that's really disheartening about it is that so first of all, I mentioned earlier, the kids who try and then fail, and then they're cutting themselves because they didn't get enough likes. But even when you look on the spectrum of those who have been most successful, Charli D'Amelio, who's the most followed, at least she was recently, TikTok star in the world, shares that it has destroyed her life.
Wow.
That she got into it because she loved dancing, and now she hates dancing. She hates herself. She struggles with so much negativity that comes at her, much
Tracy, if you were queen of the world, would you say that we should ban cell phones, smartphones for our kids until they're 18 years old?
You know, I don't think I would, because when they're 18, that's when they're also stepping out into college and onto their own.
Right.
So I think it's just really powerful to say, to provide a safe space in your home, probably through those high school years where they're getting increasing amount of responsibility, and where you do step in, where you say, hey, what is your favorite app? And if they say, oh, I love Snapchat, you start snapping, not just with them, but with your friends, so that you have some run room before they all of a sudden go out into the world. Because I think that if you just do, you know, a withholding strategy, that then it's going to be really hard for them to step back into it.
Let me just point out again, the three-part Screen Sanity Summit takes place beginning on January 19th over three different weeks, 6:30 at the Church of the Resurrection out in Leawood. It's both online and in person. More information, more details at westartnow.org. That was Tracy Foster, co-founder and director at START, which stands for Stand Together and Rethink Technology. Tracy, lots of great ideas here. I sure appreciate your time today. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much, Steve.
You bet.
What a pleasure.
That's it for today. You've been listening to Up to Date on KCUR 89.3. We'll see you tomorrow.